Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Time check here in Bonn is 9:05 and in Lagos it's 8:05. These are our main stories. Polls opened today in Burundi's highly controversial presidential election, and at least one policeman and a civilian have been reportedly killed in a violence that broke out last night.
Last night, there were gunfire, there were gunshots around several neighborhoods of the capital, Bujumbura, and there were also detonations of grenades in several neighborhoods of the capital.
And in a small village in Kenya, they are preparing to receive a well-known visitor who might be passing by.
Our students would be very happy to see the person they have been hearing about and whose name is inscribed at the school gate, Barack Obama.
A very good morning to you. It's Tuesday, the 21st of July. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo, in Bonn, Germany. Stay with tune.
Top story.
At least one police officer and a civilian have been reportedly killed in a violence that broke out last night in Burundi. The grenade attack was followed by sporadic gunfire and a blast in the city. Just fewer than 4 million citizens of Burundi are eligible to vote in today's controversial presidential elections. President Pierre Nkurunziza is seeking a third term, which the opposition says is unconstitutional. Let's go now to Apollinaire Niyorora, who is standing for us at a polling station in Bujumbura.
Yes, I'm standing at Gikungu 2 polling station. It's a place located in the commune of Gihosha, and the polling stations opened almost on time at 6:05, but of course they had to open at 6 a.m. So the operation of voting is going on well. Everything is going on well in serenity.
What can you tell us about the mood at that polling station?
Well, the mood is good. People are voting, are casting their votes in a peaceful way. I talked to an agent I found at one of the polling stations here. He said 5 persons have already come to cast their votes. It's a bit different from the polls of the 29th of June, where people were not coming. I've counted at least 15 polling stations at this center, in one of the polling stations, 5 people have already cast their vote here. So here, everyone is coming.
Did you speak to voters who've cast their vote, and what are they saying?
Well, I spoke to one of them. He said, "I came here to exercise my right of voting." He said, "I'm very eager to have come and vote."
What is the current situation in the capital, Bujumbura?
Well, this morning, the situation is very calm this morning. Last night, there were gunfire, there were gunshots around several neighborhoods of the capital, Bujumbura. And there were also detonations of grenades in several neighborhoods of the capital. And some analysts are saying that this was maybe a way to prevent people from going to cast their votes today.
Has the opposition been out on the street telling people not to cast their ballot?
You know, there were 3 candidates among the 8, including former President Domitien Ndayizeye, on behalf of the RANA coalition, Sylvestre Ntibantunganya, who is an independent candidate, and the Jaminani, who is running as a candidate of the Frodebu Nyakuri. They pulled out of the process of this presidential poll, and they also called on their members not to go to the vote.
Just for the sake of clarification, originally there were 8 political parties. How many political parties are currently contesting this ballot?
4 political parties are in the race. These include the ruling party, the CNDD-FDD, the UPRONA party, the FNL, and also a coalition of an opposition coalition that calls itself a coalition of a participatory opposition.
Have you been able to see any observer, including local and international observers?
I saw a local observer from a civil society organization and observers from the UN observation mission in Burundi.
Are people expecting these elections to be declared null and void?
Well, some of the people, especially those from the opposition, are saying, this presidential election means nothing because most of the main opposition candidates are not participating in the poll.
Apolliniani Aurora reporting from Bujumbura. Some analysts have been warning of the dangers of renewed conflict in Burundi in the wake of these elections. My colleague Mark Caldwell has been talking to Julia Graufogel, a research fellow at the German Institute of Global and Area Studies in Hamburg.
Much depends on how the current mediation attempts by the East African community and the chief mediator who was designated the president, Museveni from Uganda, will continue. Nobody really knows what will happen after tomorrow's election. The International Crisis Group said that basically we have all the ingredients for a catastrophe, but until now, we've already heard predictions several times that the country would slide into chaos and renewed civil war, and up to now, that didn't happen. So there's a small spark of hope that mediation attempts will succeed to address the crisis in one way or the other.
What are those ingredients for a catastrophe you were referring to?
Well, we have an extremely polarized political situation with a president which is absolutely unwilling to even address critical voices within his party to step down and not seek a third term. There's also certain individuals or certain groups that are trying to renew or play again on the ethnical card, even though fortunately that didn't, or until now, that didn't succeed. We have an extremely violent youth wing of the ruling party, the Imbonerakure, which are willing to defend their president at all costs. And we have an increasingly unsatisfied opposition, which doesn't seem to be patient and waiting for some sort of political situation or solution anymore.
How hopeful are you that these latest mediation efforts by the EAC will actually lead anywhere?
Well, up to now, they haven't really led anywhere. I mean, there was a sort of hopeful sign that they managed to at least bring together the opposition and the regime in the same room and to have talks which did not include any of the controversial topics for the first time. But then there was quickly disagreement over the agenda, and the ruling party, CNDD-FDD, didn't even attend the last meeting. So attempts to foster some sort of a power-sharing agreement have collapsed, but there's some hope that there will be a renewed attempt to address the crisis.
Presumably, we can assume that this election will not meet accepted standards of democratic governance.
Exactly, yes. And three of the candidates have already withdrawn their candidacies, saying that the political and security environment could not guarantee free and fair elections. But the regime appears to be very willing to push through and hold the elections no matter what.
How likely is it that the government and the opposition will start talking again once these elections are over?
Well, there will be certainly attempts by the mediator to restart the talks, and the opposition, I mean different wings of the opposition, keep stressing that they are still open to negotiations. So I'm very sure that we will see some sort of renewed negotiations after the elections.
But presumably the opposition will then be in a far weaker position than they are now, or not?
Not necessarily, because, I mean, we will see a victory of President Nkurunziza, but it's very sure that the international community and the region won't recognize this victory as having taken place in free and fair elections. So he then has succeeded at pushing through with his electoral calendar, but that doesn't really mean that he's strengthened. And the latest announcements by dissidents from his party and important members of the anti-third term camp to come up with some sort of joint alliance have certainly not strengthened his position.
Julia Graufogel, research fellow at the German Institute of Global and Area Studies in Hamburg.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
The U.S. President Barack Obama flies to Nairobi on Thursday on his first presidential visit to his father's homeland of Kenya. Security has been tightened at the home of his grandmother in the village of Kogelo, a few kilometers from the city of Kisumu. Obama's father, who died in 1982, is buried near the village, but it is, however, far from certain that the first African-American president of the United States will pay it a visit. From Kisumu, John Marwa reports.
Obama is expected in Kenya for the 6th Global Entrepreneurship Summit, which he will co-host with Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta on July 25th to 26th. The meeting will bring in an estimated 1,500 participants, who include business leaders, foundations, investors, and social entrepreneurs from around the world. With the world's eyes on Kenya, some tourists and even delegates may want to tour this part of the country, hence the tight security. Caroline Nonchoka is the Siaya County Commissioner in charge of security.
We are just here in Kogelo doing our security routine check. We are realizing that this place is attracting people all over the world, and they are coming here. So we are putting in place everything. We will be subjecting them to checks straight from the gates. We are no longer allowing vehicles to come in because we are not leaving anything to chance. With this era of Al-Shabaab, you never know.
It is not certain if President Obama will visit his father's burial place and extended family here at Nyang'oma, Kogelo. Apart from a small hut being put up in the compound is a reception for those who want to see his grandmother, Mama Sarah Obama. There is no activity or cleanup to indicate this, and the family is adding to the uncertainty. Through its spokesperson, Obama's stepsister, Masat Obama, says the family has no information on this at all.
I believe even if he's coming here, this is their home. Yeah. It's free to come anytime. Yeah, the gate is always open for him. I haven't confirmed, just as the same you guys are reading it from the news. That's how even me, I'm reading it. Visitors is just daily, as usual.
Has the number maybe increased because he's expecting the country, or maybe it is just the same as it has always been?
It's just the same, even though it has slightly increment, but not so much.
And most of the visitors who are coming here, are they from within or without?
We get all over, from all over the world, both local and international. But what you're seeing here, this is, you know, daily duty. There's nothing which has changed. I'm not over-excited or what. You know, it's just normal. To us, you know, he's a family member. He's free to come here anytime.
Despite this confusion, some residents here, like Henry Odongo, the principal of Barack Obama Secondary School that was constructed on land that was donated by the family, remain hopeful. Odongo says the population here owes Obama a lot for the infrastructure development in the village.
Our students would be very happy to see the person they've been hearing about and whose name is inscribed on the school gate, Barack Obama. Part of the land was donated by the Obama family. The home is just across here.
In the town, many are also cashing in on the tour to do business, like this trader here who sells posters and T-shirts with portraits of President Obama. Robert Otieno, happy with his sales of Obama portraits and T-shirts.
I'm selling the posters of the Obama family. Yeah. Selling after heard that Obama is coming here in Kenya. I'm getting customers. I'm selling about 10 per day. Yeah, I'm getting money. Now I'm up. I'm getting money.
Obama, Obama,
Obama has become a catchword here, with many products including drinks now bearing his name. A number of songs have also been produced congratulating him for his leadership achievement.
Karibu Kenya, Africa, oh yeah. Karibu Kenya, Karibu Kenya, Kogela Lego.
Africa on the move.
In Uganda, a new generation of athletes is training hard for international competitions, encouraged in part by the success of Stephen Kiprotich, who picked up gold in a men's marathon at the London Olympics in 2012. These young runners may lack resources or facilities, but they make up for that with determination. This report by Leon Siyange is presented by Jen Ayeko.
Strong waves awash the sandy shores of Lake Victoria as a man appears from afar running. It is right here on these shores that Uganda's next generation of runners is put through its paces.
So I'm fighting very hard and I think I can make it in 800 meters. It will actually give me exposure to the whole world. If I go there and run and win, then it will help me.
This young man is Rashid Etiao. He's one of the hopefuls at Entebbe Athletics Academy. The 19-year-old sprinter spends most of his time keeping fit and improving his running skills. In love with nature, Rashid trains right by the lakeside. As if to chill himself, he lies down on the sandy beach as his trainer massages his legs. Moses Asonya, a former Ugandan athlete, is his personal trainer. Away from the beach, the duo joins other athletes for the daily running session. Asonya wants Uganda to be known for something else.
We are lacking medals in this country. So my main aim is to train them and win medals for this country.
To achieve this dream, Asonya single-handedly founded the Entebbe Athletics Academy in 2013. He's also solely responsible for financing the project. Uganda has not had many notable successes in short-distance races. The academy does not have training grounds. For their daily training, the team meets at a rented cricket field. Many athletes at the academy are short-distance runners, mainly recruited from rural areas.
We have too much potential here in Uganda. If the government could really come up, the government could come up with the programs, support the federation, okay, go to various districts. You see, we have potential runners in this country.
Rashid Etiao is among the potential medalists. The third born in a family of six, Rashid grew up in humble surroundings, hundreds of kilometers away from the capital Kampala in the eastern district of Serere. His family could not support him financially. With Asonya's intervention, he's now dedicated to achieving his goals in athletics.
It's all about training. My coach is behind me, and I know I'll make it. He always tells me, Rashid, you're good, and only keep training, so I know I'll make it one day.
At the recent national trials, Moses Asonya tries out parts of his team against other athletes from all over the country. Five athletes from Entebbe Athletics Academy, including Rashid, finally made it to the national team. The main priority now for Rashid and his teammates is to link up with past athlete successes. Uganda's two gold medalists at the Olympics in London and Munich remain a shining example for the runners and their coach Moses Asonya.
That report was written by Leo Sienga. History was made in Senegal on Monday when a former African leader went on trial for atrocities not in front of an international tribunal but in an African court. Former Chadia dictator Hissène Habré faces charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Rights groups say 40,000 Chadians were killed during his presidency between 1982 and 1990. His regime was dominated by fierce crackdowns on opponents and the targeting of rival ethnic groups he perceived as a threat. DW's Daniel Pierce has been following the story, and Mark Caldwell asked what happened on the first day in court in Dakar.
Habré was brought into the court. Originally, he had said before he would not be attending the proceedings. Then there was a commotion in the courtroom. He accused the court of being a colonial outfit. He said he's not recognizing it. It's not a trial. It is a masquerade, he said. His supporters also started shouting. So in the end, security officers surrounded him and carried him out of the courtroom.
You said he doesn't recognize the court. How is that going to affect the proceedings?
It's going to make proceedings, of course, very difficult. He had originally already said he would stay away from proceedings. So I don't think he's going to cooperate with the court. Interrogating him will be an extremely difficult task. And probably he's always going to try to get this kind of commotion going so that he again has an excuse to be taken out of the courtroom and he doesn't have to face the judges or the victims.
Isn't this an attempt to perhaps show the international community that Africa can dispense justice just as well as, say, the International Criminal Court?
Oh yes, absolutely. I mean, partly there are practical reasons for this. The International Criminal Court can only investigate crimes or alleged crimes that were committed after the year 2002. And in the case of Habré, the crimes were definitely committed before that. So he couldn't be tried in The Hague. But at the same time, he could have been tried in Belgium. At some stage, the Belgian government wanted him to be extradited. But Senegal said no, and the African Union also said no, he should stay. So definitely they want to demonstrate to the world that Africa, African courts, are also able to deliver justice in a free and impartial way.
What can you tell us about the court that is trying him, the extraordinary African Chambers?
It is a special tribunal that was especially created by the Senegalese justice system to try him. So it's a court that is only coming together for this purpose, first of all, to trial Abré, and then it remains to be seen whether it will continue to exist after the trial.
DW's Daniel Pels.
Making a difference.
Last week, Deutsche Welle's Director General Peter Limburg was in Kenya, where he handed out awards to the winners of DW's Local Heroes Journalism Competition. A total of 9 young journalists received prizes for stories about somebody who had made a deep impression on them, somebody who had a strong sense of social commitment. The winner of the best prize for radio was Caroline B. and her local hero works in the newsroom.
I've always hated the thought of being an intern. Reason being, you get to do things you were not interviewed for. And if you do, no one pays attention. Well, most of the time that's the case. My lecturer said I can't escape it. It's a step into my career. I totally agree with that, and I've learned to embrace it. My name is Caroline B., a fourth-year communication student at Daystar University. I'm 1 month old at Milele FM, as an intern, of course. This is the newsroom. One of those voices belongs to my older friend. Meet him.
I am Luke Rich. I write for People Daily. I'm in the news desk. I write majorly political stories.
I've been sent to various assignments, some interesting and others not so interesting.
The electricity connection has dropped.
Look so big. Somebody tells you that you go.
9 commissioners every day waking up pretending to be going to work.
We will mobilize all comms.
I've had my recorder go off twice in very important presses. That meant no story to take home. You want to know what I told my editor? Of course, they can't spill the beans. If I do, what will I feed on? A witch has been the center of my growth. I accompanied him to the field for my very first assignment. A section of politicians were complaining about nothing. Nothing at all. I could see a witch scribbling really fast. Likewise to the rest of the journalists. Then came time to compare notes. It's been a 3-hour talk. I have 2 pages. A witch has around 7. Well, but they were saying nothing. Needless to say, that was the beginning of my how to cover a presser one-on-one class. Want to know part of what he told me?
Go with them to the field. You give them the free hand. Then you tell them what was the story from that particular function. And then you'll see how they try to bring up, though it might not be perfect being the first time, but you can see the skeleton of the story, how they are trying hard to explain. Then you can help them to fine-tune and know how to identify a story.
He's my hero. He has taught me how to be keen, how to identify a story in a talk, how to make an impact in storytelling. I once told him he's my hero. He said, I don't know the definition of a hero.
I'll just tell the definition of a hero. Maybe they are putting the bar too low. Aspire higher.
Even though he doesn't agree with me, my hero has coached me how to explore beyond my set boundaries. He is not scared to show me my weaknesses, control my own ego, and live for a purpose much greater than myself. And for that, I applaud him. A hero is a precious stone, very rare to find. Thanks, a witch, for sharpening me. I know I still have a long way to go, but I'm grateful you crossed my path.
Caroline B., one of the winners of DW's Local Heroes Journalism Competition. And now a reminder of our main stories. The people of Burundi go to the polls today with President Pierre Nkurunziza seeking a third term in office, which the opposition says is unconstitutional. The polling day has been marked by violence and the death of 2 people. Former Chadian dictator Hissène Habré has gone on trial in Senegal on charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity. We welcome your comment on this program either in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, an SMS to country code 491609575910, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Do join us again tomorrow. My name is Abubakar Jallo in Bonn.